This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. This week, we're taking a closer look at the natural gas industry and its impact on human health and the environment. In just under a decade, some 200,000 gas wells have been drilled in the U.S. The boom is largely the product of an engineering technique that allows drillers to tap gas reserves that were once unreachable. The technique is called hydraulic fracturing.
Fracking has generated much-needed jobs, about 600,000 of them, and billions of dollars for the U.S. economy. But scientists warn very little is known about how much pollution it's causing. We begin our series in one of the nation's biggest gas hotspots, the vast Marcellus Shale that runs through western Pennsylvania. NPR's Christopher Joyce reports on the struggle to prevent the region's water from being polluted by the gas industry.
Water is a big deal in Pennsylvania. It's got great trout streams, beautiful rivers, but industry has ruined a lot of Pennsylvania's water. Coal companies hammered this place. Mining left behind acidic water that's killed thousands of miles of streams. I stood on a bridge over a patch of the Lackawanna River, and every rock I could see was bright orange. And now Pennsylvanians fear a new toxic legacy, this time from shale gas. David Yoxheimer is a hydrologist at Penn State University.
Are we going to let this happen to Pennsylvania again? Are we going to make sure that we have enough money and that these companies' feet are held to the fire to make sure that once their operations are done, they put everything back together, tidy it up, and make it look like nothing happened there in the first place?
New gas drilling companies in the state want Pennsylvania's water to bust open shale. That means, first of all, water trucks. Everybody complains about these, even people in the industry. I visited a truck staging area run by Chesapeake Energy, and I talked to
Dan Lopata, L-O-P-A-T-A.
And you're in charge of water?
I'm the field superintendent with Chesapeake, in charge of all of our water infrastructure. That's correct.
For the whole Marcellus?
For the whole Marcellus.
It's a lot of water.
It's a lot of water, a lot of trucks. The transportation of all the fluids is probably our biggest expense, and that's our highest exposure to the local community. That's what they see driving up and down the road are the trucks.
And that's what they're annoyed with.
I would say yes to that question.
The water trucks roll up to a Chesapeake frack site, a drilling pad about half the size of a football field on a leveled hilltop. There's machinery and workers everywhere, all surrounded by forest, Deer in the woods and John Deere on the pad. Workers here drill about a mile down, then out sideways into a layer of shale that holds natural gas. They detonate charges to crack the shale. Then they pump millions of gallons of water mixed with sand and chemicals down at high pressure to pry open those cracks and release the gas. When the gas comes to the surface, it brings up a lot of that water, and it's pretty nasty. Brian Grove is a Chesapeake senior director. He explains that the water has been exposed to what was once a seabed.
When you expose fresh water to it, that water absorbs the salts. That is something that you don't want to spill on the surface.
Besides salt, the water picks up minerals from the shale, some of them toxic, some radioactive. About a third of that polluted brine comes right back up, but more salty liquid will spew out of the well over a period of years. This wastewater is what makes people really twitchy. That's because industry used to dump the water straight into rivers, and pools holding the waste sometimes leaked. Brian Grove says the industry should have warned people how messy fracking is.
I think the biggest mistake the industry made early on in Marcellus development was just remaining silent. I think the industry as a whole has for 50, 60 years operated largely in Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana. The folks that moved east were people that were not used to having to explain themselves. They were used to being understood.
But explaining what fracking looks like may not have satisfied people in the face of this onslaught. Over 5,000 new wells just since 2008 in the Marcellus Shale, and there have been close to 700 violations involving water. And those violations have cost the industry a little over $1.5 million. So, under a lot of public pressure, the State Department of Environmental Protection has cracked down. They said no more dumping frack water straight into rivers. So some companies ran it through public water treatment plants. But the state stopped that, too. It came out too salty and too dirty. So the industry was forced to find another way to deal with frack water. And that's how the recycling business got started. Eureka Resources in Williamsport is an old brick factory next to the Susquehanna River. I put on a hard hat and went into the plant to talk with owner Dan Ertel about this recycling business.
Oh, I can smell that.
This flowback water. This is where all the flowback and produced water comes.
When Eureka started in 2008, the state wasn't ready for all this frack water from the wells.
We saw an absolute lack of any water treatment businesses or companies here.
So Eureka modified off-the-shelf technology to clean up this peculiar mix of gunk in frack wastewater. There's solid material like dirt, minerals like calcium, barium, sulfur compounds, and other pollutants. Then drillers take the cleaned up water back and use it again to break shale in a new well. All of this is an improvement, but at some point companies will stop drilling new wells and leave, and the state will have to find a way to get rid of the wastewater that's left behind. And in the meantime, there will be more spills. They tend to take place out of sight, in places people don't go to, a frack site, out in the woods, or on a deserted country road. And people worry about what they can't see. So there are scientists who are out there trying to see for them. I met hydrologist Andrew Gavin at a very nice trout stream called Gray's Run. He works for the Susquehanna Basin River Commission. We pulled on some waders, and Gavin explained what he was up to.
What we're doing in this monitoring project is really establishing what the general health of is the stream so that then we can measure, you know, if there are any changes to the quality of the water.
Scientists have to know the chemistry of a clean stream now so they'll know if frack water gets into one.
And just keep going until you fill up the sampling container.
The commission Gavin works for has planted battery-powered monitors in over 50 streams. If something unusual gets in the stream, their computers in Harrisburg alert them. So overall, there's been improvement in the way frack water is handled. But scientists say they need to be vigilant. Frack water chemistry, for example, can be surprising. I heard that from a water engineer, Gene Van Briesen, at Carnegie Mellon University.
We're not omniscient. We can't see everything. And sometimes there are downstream effects, particularly ones that involve the way systems interact with each other.
In fact, that happened in Pennsylvania. Bromide in frack water reacted with disinfectants at water treatment plants and created new compounds that could be hazardous to people's health. Van Briesen says she also wonders about what happens to all the frack water that's left underground. Pennsylvania is a pincushion. Oil and gas drilling has gone on for over a century here. She worries that frack water could seep up to the surface.
There are lots of holes in Pennsylvania. Knowing where the old wells are is very important when you're putting in a new one.
And people don't know where all those old wells are. Pennsylvania's struggle with this new industry is being repeated in other states where there is gas-bearing rock. Penn State's David Yoxheimer, the hydrologist who follows the frack water, says this issue has really galvanized people.
The natural gas industry and fracking has sort of been a lightning rod for America's environmental consciousness.
And although each state with natural gas is unique, one thing is common to all of them, the need for water. Lots of it. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
Our series on America's fracking boom continues tomorrow on Morning Edition. We'll hear from sick patients living near gas wells in Pennsylvania and from the doctors who are searching for answers. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Alyssa Block. The United States is in the middle of a natural gas boom. These days, a community can find itself not simply with one or two new wells, but suddenly surrounded by them. And that has some locals worried. Their biggest concern is that the chemicals used in gas production are causing everything from nosebleeds to cancer. But scientists see it differently. They say the evidence of harm just isn't convincing. To find out why there's such a disconnect, NPR's John Hamilton visited the small town of Dish, Texas.
Look at a satellite image of Dish, and you'll see an odd patchwork. There are ranch-style homes and green pastures, but there are also rectangles of gray-blue gravel. Zoom in a bit, and you can see they're filled with gas wells, compressors, storage tanks, and metering stations. Bill Zisko is the mayor of Dish, and he has a message for anyone who expects to see gas drilling in their town.
Run! Run as fast as you can. Grab up your family and your belongings and get out.
Zisko says he can't leave. He owns too much property here that no one wants to buy. So he took over as mayor last year after the previous mayor and his family left to get away from the drilling. Zisko's an imposing guy. Black boots, black sports coat, aviator sunglasses. He shows me around town. About 225 people live here among the gas wells. In some areas, there's the sulfurous odor of escaping gas. In others, you can feel the rumble of compressor engines big enough to power a locomotive. Cisco says things were very different when he moved here in 1987.
This place was absolutely beautiful. It was serene. It was very quiet, very clean. I raised 5 children here.
Then, around 2005, 2 things happened to the town, which was named Clark at the time. First, Clark became Dish as part of a deal to get free satellite TV service from the Dish network. Second, energy companies arrived and began drilling lots of gas wells. The wells were made possible by a technique known as hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, which released natural gas trapped in the hard shale a mile underground.
We're going to take a left on this dirt road right here in front of the truck.
Cisco has brought me to the biggest thing in Dish.
We can just pull right up to the gate here.
It's a swath of gas wells and heavy equipment that stretches for a quarter mile. Cisco says emissions from this site aren't safe to breathe.
It's just a who's who toxic chemical mix. Pretty much all of those items that you get from petroleum products are spewing into the air in this area.
A few years ago, the town spent $15,000 on an air quality study. It found elevated levels of several chemicals, including benzene. But since then, energy companies have fixed some problems, and the state installed a device that constantly sniffs the air for pollution. It shows levels are generally within government limits. And when state health officials came to check for toxins in residents' blood and urine, they found no cause for concern. Even so, Cisco firmly believes that people in Dish have been hurt.
There's not a lot of residents right around this facility, but within a quarter of a mile, half a mile of this facility, there's been 6 people die of cancer here. And so do I think that this is a concern? Yes, I do.
Cisco is pretty convincing. And even scientists who are skeptical about his claims say they understand why he's concerned. But they also say the scientific evidence that gas production around Dish has made anyone sick is pretty weak. To understand why, I go see Brian Schwartz, an environmental epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. I ask him, what would it take to figure out whether there really is a link between gas operations around Dish and those people with cancer?
My answer to that would be you can't. You can't study that right now because it takes about 20 years, let's say, for solid tumors to develop after exposure to a chemical. So if the drilling has happened in the last 5 years, I cannot answer the cancer question right now.
Schwartz says even if more time had passed, a half dozen cancer cases probably wouldn't mean much, unless they were all the same type of cancer.
Cancer is not one disease. Cancer is 100 different diseases. So if that person has leukemia, that person has lung cancer, and that person has ovarian cancer, it's not a cancer cluster. Those 3 cancers all have very, very different causes.
Health officials in the U.S. check out more than 1,000 suspected cancer clusters each year. They almost never find anything. Of course, cancer is just one of the concerns in Dish. The previous mayor, the guy who left town last year, is Calvin Tillman. Tillman says he got worried when his 2 sons began getting nosebleeds. Then one night, he says, his younger son had a nosebleed that got really bad.
Our house literally looked like a murder scene. There was blood down the wall in the hallway. And I got up the next morning to go to work, and my wife said, "That is it." And at that moment, we decided we've got to move out of here.
Tillman moved his family off the shale to a town called Aubrey. He says back when he was still mayor, he realized that scientists wouldn't pay attention to just one story like his. So he had residents fill out a health survey.
Do you have itchy eyes, bloody nose, runny nose, scratchy throat, things like that? And it came back that about half the people that were polled had a symptom that could be related to one of the chemicals that we found in our air study.
But scientists say the mere presence of a chemical isn't enough. You have to know how much people were exposed to and for how long. Tom LaPointe is a toxicologist at the University of North Texas in Denton, about 15 miles east of Dish. He's also part of a task force looking at the impact of fracking. LaPointe says modern testing equipment can detect chemicals at levels far, far below those known to hurt anyone.
I've had people get quite upset saying, well, we can measure benzene. Well, yes, we measured benzene, but the concentrations are below the effect level. And that means something. That really does.
LaPointe says even if tests do find enough of a chemical to cause health effects, there's another scientific hurdle. researchers need to know whether the pollutant is coming from local gas operations or some other source, like cars and trucks. LaPointe says that's hard to figure out in a place like Dish because it gets so much of its air pollution from the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
So ironically, even though we're not by any means the largest county in the Metroplex, we have the worst air quality because the general winds bring it up from Dallas and Fort Worth over Denton County,
where it mixes with the pollutants from gas production. So you've got two mayors from one small town making some big claims. And you've got scientists who say those claims aren't backed by solid evidence. But are the mayors wrong to say that gas production is a hazard? Brian Schwartz, the epidemiologist from Johns Hopkins, says no one knows. And he says that's a big problem.
When these areas are developed, thousands to tens of thousands of wells are drilled and fracked. So the magnitude is huge. And frankly, the development is way out ahead of public health evaluations of any kind to date.
Schwartz says that's not fair to Dish or any other place where people are worried about the health effects of drilling and fracking. John Hamilton, NPR News.
This week, we're examining the stories of people who live near natural gas wells and are getting sick. We heard stories yesterday of people in Pennsylvania and Colorado. But it takes more than one person's story to make the connection between pollution and illness. Scientists say they want to study detailed information on a large group of people over a long period of time. And there is an effort to do that in the mountains of northern Pennsylvania. NPR's John Hamilton reports.
Energy companies have drilled about 5,000 gas wells in Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale, and they plan to drill thousands more. So northern Pennsylvania is a pretty good place to ask whether all that drilling is affecting people's health. But researchers say there's another compelling reason to do a study here. It's a database of electronic health records on hundreds of thousands of people who live near the Marcellus Shale. Without records like this, it would be almost impossible to figure out whether drilling is affecting public health.
So here I'm bringing a patient up.
Dr. Paul Simonelli says those records mean that all kinds of information is just a few keystrokes away.
And what is immediately available here is all the office visits this particular patient has had in our system. This patient's been seen in our system well over a dozen times, and this dates back to 2001.
The database is one of just a handful in the nation that are so large and comprehensive. It belongs to the Geisinger Health System, which includes doctors, hospitals, and health insurance plans. Geisinger helps provide care for more than 2 million Pennsylvanians. Simonelli is the director of thoracic medicine at the system's gleaming headquarters in Danville. He says eventually, researchers hope to use the database to see whether there's a link between gas drilling and a wide range of diseases, such as cancer and diabetes. But they plan to start by focusing on just one health problem. Asthma.
This is our pulmonary function lab. So if people were to come in to get pulmonary function testing, this is where they'd be, down this corridor.
Simonelli says people with asthma and other lung problems are very sensitive to some of the air pollutants that come from natural gas production. He says you can actually measure the effect these pollutants have on an asthma patient's lungs.
I want you to put the mouthpiece in your mouth, between your teeth, lips tight. I'm going to put nose clips on your nose so the air doesn't escape through there.
A technician named Mary Ellen Norquist shows how.
And then deep breath in. Keep going, keep pushing, push, 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 keep pushing, keep pushing. Couple more seconds.
Simonelli says the results of tests like this one all end up in the system's database. And that sort of information should make it possible to study the health effects of one pollutant that often forms near gas operations. It's ground-level ozone, or smog. Simonelli says when ozone levels rise, asthma patients start looking for help.
The first line of therapy are primary care physicians, and clearly they'll start seeing more business. We see it in the specialty clinics such as my own, where we'll be messaged by lots of patients that I'm getting worse, what should I do? People come in the emergency rooms.
About 6% of people in the U.S. have asthma. That means Geisinger has records on tens of thousands of asthma patients. And Simonelli says most of these patients live in rural areas where ozone wasn't a problem before gas drilling.
So we're talking about an enormous number of people who are potentially at risk to have their conditions worsened by these exposures.
The Geisinger database should be able to reveal any change because its records go back more than a decade. One scientist who believes in the Geisinger effort is Brian Schwartz, an environmental epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. He's working with Geisinger on the project. Schwartz says the system's information is so detailed that it's possible to gather information about specific groups of asthma patients, say those who live within a mile of a gas well.
How much medications they're using? Are they being admitted to the hospital? Are they requiring emergency department visits? Are they using more inhalers?
Schwartz says Geisinger is in a unique position to measure the effects of a huge natural experiment. That's because in Pennsylvania, large-scale drilling came relatively recently. In places like Texas, most wells were already operating by the time researchers started looking into health effects. And Schwartz says other places don't have Geisinger's trove of electronic health records that go back long before the gas boom started.
Because we have 10 years of health data, but the drilling has mainly been for the past 5 years, we have a period with information on asthma patients and controls before drilling, a period after drilling. And so I think it's a very powerful design that can answer a number of questions right now.
There's one big hitch, though. The asthma study alone is likely to cost nearly $1 million, and no one has offered to pay for it yet. Even so, Schwartz is optimistic. One reason is that the research has strong support at Geisinger, from the CEO on down. David Carey, who directs the system's Weiss Center for Research, says there's a good reason.
If you look at the map, the geographic footprint of our patient catchment area, this is literally going on in our backyard.
So Carey and other Geisinger officials have been promoting the study to scientists and funding agencies. And Carey says the response has been positive, in part because the health system is seen as a neutral party in the national debate about fracking and shale gas production.
We're not out to get anybody. We just want to let the facts lead us wherever they will. So if we do find that there are environmental exposures that are harming people's health, we'll say it. If we find evidence that there's nothing to worry about, we'll say that too.
Carey hopes to have an answer before a lot more drilling takes place in the Marcellus Shale. John Hamilton, NPR News.
Our series continues this afternoon, All Things Considered, with the story of a Texas town at the center of the fracking boom.
The natural gas boom that's underway in the country is creating a lot of excitement. It's providing jobs and injecting cash, often into areas that were hit hard by the economic downturn. It's also providing an abundant and cheap source of energy. But there are a lot of concerns about the impact on health and the environment. All this week, we'll be hearing from people living on the front lines of the gas drilling industry, and we'll look into just how safe it is to live and work so close to this fast-growing sector. Today, NPR's Rob Stein takes us to a health clinic in rural Pennsylvania.
Everything seemed pretty quiet when Kay Allen started work that day. She's a nurse at a community clinic in southwestern Pennsylvania. But things didn't stay quiet for long.
All the girls, they were yelling at me in the back, "You gotta come out here quick, you gotta come out here quick."
Kay rushed out front and knew right away what all the yelling was about. The whole place reeked, like someone had spilled a giant bottle of nail polish remover.
So I told everybody to get outside and get fresh air. So we went outside, and Aggie said, "Kay, I'm gonna be sick," but before I could get in to get something for her to throw up in, she had to go over the railing.
Nothing like this had ever happened in the 20 years Kay's been at the clinic. After about 45 minutes, she thought the coast was clear and took everyone back inside.
It was fine, but then the next thing you know, they're calling me again. There was another gust. Well, the one girl, Miranda, she was sitting at the registration place, and you could tell she had had too much of it. And Miranda got overcome by that, and she passed out.
This sort of thing has been happening for weeks at the Cornerstone Care Clinic in Burkittstown, Pennsylvania. Mysterious gusts of fumes keep wafting through the clinic. The day before our visit, Kay suddenly felt like she'd been engulfed by one of these big invisible bubbles.
And all of a sudden, your tongue gets this metal taste on it, and it feels like it's enlarging. And it just feels like you're not getting enough air in because your throat gets real burny. And the next thing I know, I was...
Yeah. You passed out.
I passed out.
Half a dozen of Kay's co-workers stopped coming in. One old-timer quit. No one can figure out what's going on. For doctors and nurses used to taking care of sick people, it's unnerving to suddenly be the patients.
It's the unknown, I think, that is the scariest thing.
So they're doing what doctors usually do in this kind of situation. Look for the cause. Rich Reinhardt runs Cornerstone. It's surrounded by valleys and rolling green hills. And on one of those hills, he just noticed a tower. That means there's a new gas well there. He can't help but wonder whether the natural gas drilling going on all around them may have something to do with it.
I'm laying in bed at night thinking all kinds of theories. So is something coming through the air from some process that they're using? I know they use a lot of chemicals and so forth. Certainly that could be a culprit. We're wondering, is something coming up through the ground?
Now, no one knows whether the gas drilling has anything to do with what's happening. It could easily turn out to be something completely unrelated. There's a smelting plant down the road, old coal mines everywhere.
Anything could be possible, and we just are trying to get to the root of it.
This mystery isn't just happening at the Cornerstone Clinic. People living near gas well drilling all around the country are reporting similar symptoms, plus terrible headaches, nasty rashes, wheezing, weird aches and pains. And some of the doctors in places where drilling's booming say they don't know how to help these patients. Dr. Julie DeRosa works at Cornerstone.
I don't want to ignore symptoms that could be clues to a serious condition. I also don't want to order a lot of unnecessary tests. I don't want to feed any kind of hysteria.
To try to figure out what's going on, the clinic called in some experts. They called Pennsylvania's version of the EPA, which is investigating. They also started testing the air for chemicals and keeping diaries of everyone's symptoms. And they called Raina Ripple.
Okay, we just wanted to do a couple quick water samples, so...
Ripple just started a nonprofit to help people in southwestern Pennsylvania struggling with this kind of medical mystery. Her team's at the clinic today to take samples of tap water from inside a men's room and from a stream out back.
Just let it run a little bit before you do it.
She knows people in the area have a lot of questions.
Is my water safe to drink? Is the air fit to breathe? Am I going to suffer long-term health impacts from this?
To try to answer these questions, her project's connecting doctors and patients with experts who might be able to help sort things out. These are toxicologists, occupational health doctors, environmental scientists. David Brown helped set up the program because he knows people are frustrated.
People go from physician to physician because nobody seems to be able to treat this awful rash that I have, or nobody seems to be able to deal with my gastrointestinal pain that I have, and so they go from place to place trying to find someone that can do that.
So the project's starting to educate doctors about what kinds of tests they can try and what kind of advice to give. And they also have a nurse practitioner. She visits and counsels people who are sick. Dr. Sian Portman's one of the project's doctors, but Portman's skeptical many people are getting sick from the drilling, which is commonly called fracking. There are 5,000 new wells in Pennsylvania. Given those numbers, he says,
you'd expect people dropping all over the place based on the amount of fracking that's going on here. You would look around and see people dropping like flies. It's not the case. I don't see anybody affected, and it's not for a lack of looking.
Portman, who like a lot of people in the area has leased some of his land for drilling, wants to make sure no one's missing more mundane explanations.
We have an old saying, in medicine you hear hoofbeats, you don't think zebras, you think horses.
The cause could be something a lot more common, Lyme disease, some kind of virus, allergies. The natural gas industry says there's no evidence that drilling is causing health problems. Health experts say there's only really one way to know whether the drilling is making people sick or not. Do some big studies. Christopher Portier heads the National Center for Environmental Health.
There's a lot of anecdotal evidence out there, and so a well-conducted study looking at a number of communities could help us better understand if there's an impact, what's its magnitude, how we should avoid having that impact if there is one.
Problem is, no one's done that yet. So in the meantime, patients and doctors don't have a lot of options. In western Pennsylvania, a lot of them are being referred to Dr. Charles Wernz. He's just across the border in Morgantown at West Virginia University. He's used to dealing with chemical exposures. He usually treats workers who get sick on the job. Lately, he's seeing more people who live near the drilling. For now, he can't really do much more than offer basic advice. Drink bottled water, air out the house, leave your shoes outside, and, Wernz says, if it's still bad, move, if you can.
It is frustrating. As a physician, I like it when somebody can come to me with a problem and I can help them solve the problem, whether it's through, a specific treatment or, whatever. And this is frustrating because the treatment is really to get away from the exposure, and that's hard to do.
Back at the Cornerstone Clinic, things got so bad they decided they had to close down. They're moving to temporary offices until someone, hopefully, figures out what's going on. Rob Stein, NPR News.
Tomorrow here in Morning Edition, we'll hear about an intensive study that's trying to provide concrete answers to the questions surrounding natural gas production and health.
We finish our series this week on America's natural gas boom with a story about a new law in Pennsylvania, a law that has doctors nervous. It allows physicians access to information about trade secret chemicals that are used by natural gas drilling companies. Doctors say they need to know what's in those formulas in order to treat patients who may have been exposed to them. But the new law also says the doctors can't tell anyone else, not even other doctors, what's in those formulas. Susan Phillips reports on what's being called the doctor gag rule.
Dr. Amy Perret is a plastic surgeon who practices in suburban Pittsburgh. She does reconstructive surgeries and deals with a lot of skin issues. She tells me about one case when parents brought in a boy with strange skin lesions.
Their son is quite ill, has had lethargy, nosebleeds, has had tremendous lymphadenopathy. He's had liver damage. I don't know if it's due to exposure.
The family lived near natural gas drilling activity, and there was some concern he may have been exposed to some of the chemicals being used. Producing natural gas is pretty industrial and gives off a lot of fumes. Chemicals help to get the gas flowing. Perret's first step was to figure out what chemicals the drillers were using, and that information isn't easy to get. In this case, the patient's family had a good lawyer who helped find out what the company was using.
If I don't know what they've been exposed to, how do I find the antidote for what they've been exposed to? It's impossible. We're definitely not clairvoyant.
But Pennsylvania has a new law that's supposed to make things easier for doctors and patients. The new law requires drillers to post the chemicals used to produce oil or gas on a public website that doctors like Perret could access. But the website doesn't list all the chemicals used. It doesn't list trade secrets. These are ingredients that a company says they have to keep secret in order to maintain an edge over their competitors. Before the law, doctors couldn't find out what those trade secrets were. Now they can. But here's the catch. Doctors can only get chemical names if they sign a confidentiality agreement and agree not to share that information. And that makes doctors like Amy Perret very nervous.
As I understand it, it's legally binding. So if 20 years from now I hiccup that someone was exposed to zippity-doo-dah, I'm legally liable for that.
It's not even clear if doctors like Perret can tell the patient what they've been exposed to, or the patient's neighbors, coworkers, or even primary care doctor. Ever since the law was signed earlier this year, doctors have been asking lots of questions. But authors of the law say doctors are overreacting. Drew Crompton is a legislative staffer and one of the primary drafters of the law.
It's not to discredit those who are sincerely looking out for the health of others, but I think a mountain has been made out of a molehill.
The law was modeled after a federal OSHA regulation. At a recent talk, the state's top environmental official, Michael Crancer, defended what some are calling the doctor gag rule.
The quote, gag order on physicians. Well, nothing could be further from the truth or more nonsensical than this. The provisions in Act 13 are exactly like what we have already and have had in the federal system since the 70s. There's nothing new there.
But there are some differences. The federal law was designed for workers. The new state laws cover everyone, and critics say some important parts of the federal law are missing in these state laws. Barry Farrow is the director of the health law program at Drexel University in Philadelphia. He says the law is vague.
They've lacked definition. They haven't defined the boundaries of disclosure, so doctors are properly nervous. What can they disclose to the state? What can they disclose to the community?
Pennsylvania health officials recently issued a statement assuring doctors that they would be able to share information with their patients and public health officials. But law professor Barry Farrow wonders how well that statement would hold up in court.
If Halliburton decides to sue a doctor, that's quite terrifying. You have a very large, probably rather aggressive company given its history.
Dr. Howard Frumkin is the dean of the School of Public Health at the University of Washington. He's an expert in treating workers exposed to chemicals on the job. He agrees there's a legitimate right for industry to protect trade secrets. But there's also a need to balance that with the public's right to know about what they're being exposed to.
In this case, it seems that the law tried to make the balance but didn't quite get it right, because there are very chilling statements there that would inhibit physicians and public health officials from getting information that they need.
Some state lawmakers are responding to doctors' confusion. A bill has been introduced to remove the need for a confidentiality agreement. For NPR News, I'm Susan Phillips in Philadelphia.
That story came to us from State Impact, a collaboration between NPR and member stations. It explores how state issues affect people's lives.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. America's natural gas industry is thriving, and hundreds of thousands of new wells have given a vital boost to the nation's sputtering economy. But today we ask, at what cost? A debate is raging about whether these wells, in addition to creating jobs, are also creating harmful air pollution. NPR's Elizabeth Shogren takes us now to Garfield County, Colorado. There, gas wells are being built so close to people's homes that residents are increasingly disturbed by what they call close encounters.
Living in the middle of a natural gas boom can be pretty unsettling. Let me tell you about this one neighborhood in Silt. It used to be the kind of sleepy, rural place where the tweet of birds was the most you'd hear. Now you can hardly make out the birds because of the rumbling of drilling rigs. The land here is all steep cliffs and valleys, but bare splotches of earth called well pads are all over the place.
Yeah, that's the one I'm worried about because it just went in.
We're on Tim Ray's front porch just after sunset. You can see the lights of drill rigs all around his small house.
And there's actually one up here over the hill that they just put in. There's one, three or four of them up there.
People around here say their air stinks. They complain about itchy eyes, scratchy throats, and getting sick to their stomachs.
I worry about my health. I worry about my kids' health.
Companies can drill 20 wells or more from a single site. They come back again and again over the course of years. Each time, there's an onslaught of fumes. There are exhausts from drilling machines, vapors from storage tanks, and lots of chemicals in the millions of gallons of water drillers use to get the wells flowing faster. Tim wonders, what's in those fumes that blow into his yard?
Nobody's told us anything about the quality of our air as far as what we're smelling or anything. I would feel better if I knew that the gases weren't bad.
People are asking these same questions wherever natural gas is being drilled around the United States. Tracy Halp has been, too, for a long time.
There's a great frustration. I'm hearing the same stories today that I heard 9 years ago.
That was when she left her pretty log home on a ski mountain and went to campaign to be a Garfield County commissioner. Tracy sounds low-key, but she's a fighter. As she went around the county campaigning, she got really charged up because she just couldn't believe what she saw.
In Colorado, you can have a drill rig 150 feet from a home. The original thought was if the rig falls, it won't hit the house.
She didn't want this county, this rural refuge, to be sacrificed, to be developed for energy for the rest of the country. In 2002, she won her election, and here's one of the first things she wanted to know. Did scientists have any answers for what was in the air around here? Let me tell you, she was shocked by what she found.
There really were no good studies out there at the time.
Not local ones, state ones, or from the Environmental Protection Agency. Not about this gas field or any others in the United States. So she got busy, trying to figure out what was in the air. But Tracy was only one of three commissioners. Those are the people who run the county. She had to get the others on board as well. The same was true when she was part of a state committee that regulates drilling.
The conversation was always a question of how far we should push the industry. It was a question at the county level. It was a question when I was on the Oil and Gas Commission and we were rewriting the rules.
The industry was bringing a lot of jobs and a lot of money to Garfield County. Still, the commissioners did agree to start spending some of the county's gas royalties to try to get answers. They hired Jim Rada in 2005 to create an environmental health office.
So, I'm going to take you guys down to the west.
He gives us a ride around the county in his hybrid SUV. He wants to show us how the gas industry spreads out all over the place.
There are pipelines, there are storage yards, compressor stations, gas plants.
He's spent a good 7 years studying the air here. He has monitors on top of a school, a fire station, and historic buildings. They tell him the air is pretty good for most people in this county. But what about the people with front row seats to drilling?
How close can people be to these operations, you know?
So in 2008, Jim Rada got a chance to examine just how close. He put air sampling canisters around 8 wells that were being drilled. For 24 hours, they captured chemicals. Now that seems like an obvious thing to do, but it hadn't been done before, not anywhere in the United States.
You know, we were pretty much breaking ground, you know, in terms of trying to do the science that needed to be done in order to answer some of these questions.
Jim found very large amounts of chemicals. Some of them, like benzene, can cause cancer. Others, like xylenes, can irritate eyes and lungs. But no matter what data he came up with, everyone said he needed more. Jim realized he needed backup.
You know, to get to the bottom line and answer that nagging question of what is this air quality doing to the health of the community, that takes a whole lot more resources than a single county can devote to this.
Okay, so this was 2009. Nearly 3,000 wells had gone in the year before. And the commissioner's next move, who they called, turned out to have some pretty painful consequences. You see, they moved beyond looking at what was in the air to whether gas industry pollution could make people sick. They called in the Colorado School of Public Health. They wanted to see if researchers could take Jim's data and predict whether lots of drilling in a neighborhood could hurt people's health. John Atgate chairs the school and worked on the project.
We used what little data that Garfield County had collected around the well sites to estimate health effects.
They predicted small increases in risks of cancer, headaches, and lung problems. And when that study went public, all hell broke loose. Everything became too
political.
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 Political. Political.
Nearly everybody we talked to said that, including John Martin. He's another longtime Garfield County commissioner. John Martin says it became political because people who live near wells used the report to attack the industry in lawsuits. And gas companies didn't like it.
Both sides were fighting. They wanted to use this document in both arguments that it didn't hurt anything and it killed everyone.
The companies argued that the researchers were jumping to conclusions. David Ludlam is the executive director of the Regional Industry Trade Group.
They used what we believe was questionable data at best. You can't make assumptions about health impacts if you don't have the data to support it.
Now, the Colorado School of Public Health stands behind its study. And so do other academic experts. But the controversy got too hot for the county. This is how John Martin remembers it.
We said, this is a football in the arena of global warming and anti-oil and gas or anti-environment. We said, enough is enough, people.
He says there was only one thing to do. The county commissioners called a meeting.
Gentlemen, decision time. All those in favor of the motion to end the contract and to leave it as an unfinished document.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Leave it at that point.
The commission voted to end the project. And remember Tracy Haupt, the commissioner who started the big push for answers? Well, she didn't have a vote because she had lost her reelection. So she stood on the sidelines, watching all her years of work unraveling.
I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned.
All that momentum the county had built up, it came to a screeching halt. They tried a couple more times to study air near wells, but gas industry rep David Ludlam objected.
I sent an email indicating that our operators and our organization would be uncomfortable moving forward working with the Colorado School of Public Health because things had become so polarized that we didn't see a pathway forward.
David Ludlam says there's a new study in the works with different researchers on the job. Results won't come for at least 3 years. So a decade has passed since Garfield County started seeking answers. Back then, the county had 800 wells. Now, there are more than 8,000. As for the people who live near wells, whether they're in Colorado, Texas, Pennsylvania, or Utah, they still don't know what they're breathing. Elizabeth Shogren, NPR News.